Greetings, Hoopsheads. Welcome to Locked On Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Wednesday, May 16th. I'm your host, Aliko Carter. I apologize for this late podcast. If you could believe it, one of the male ends of my microphone cord completely broke off. Had a bunch of compatible cords, but they didn't work and had to go get a new one. Best Buy for the win. But there's just enough time to get pumped for Game 2. Great Game 1 victory for the Warriors on Monday. Just absolutely dismantling the Houston Rockets. A lot has been said about James Harden playing right into the Warriors' hands with his dribbling. The Warriors closed out well on shooters, and a lot of that was because they didn't have to move that much because James Harden and, to a lesser extent, Chris Paul just control the game from the top of the key. We'll talk about all that and more, but first, I want to let you know this podcast is available on Spotify, Google Play, iOS, and iTunes. Also on LockedOnWarriors.com, make sure you bookmark that page. You can reach me via Twitter at Koji Tare, K-O-G-I-T-A-R-E, and you can find my written work on Forbes.com. All right, let's do this. I want to dive into the stats and just chatter from Game 1 leading into Game 2, and I want to talk a little bit about the Cavaliers' woes, LeBron's woes, 42 points, a triple-double, 10 rebounds, 12 assists, tied for the fourth highest scoring total with a triple-double in playoff history. Came in a loss. Celtics are that good. The Celtics are that good, and the Cleveland Cavaliers are not that good, but LeBron is so good that I still think he's going to win this series. I do. Though the idea that Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, Marcus Morris would fall back to earth is preposterous at this point, right? They are who they are. They're that good. They have that much chemistry. They have that much confidence. And their coach is legit, but they're super talented. It would be an absolute feat if this Boston team made the finals. Something the NBA needs. I think the NBA needs Boston to make the finals just a little bit more than they need LeBron to make the finals, but LeBron is such a brand, such an institution, really, that him making the finals for an eighth straight year would only serve to further the reach of the NBA around the world. I'm going to get to LeBron and the Celtics in the third segment. First two segments, all about the dubs. I am going to take a trip down the Reddit hole, but this first segment is all about the chatter around the team, a little bit of statistics as well. So let's get right into it. Sam Amick of USA Today has a really good piece on the Rockets' pounding style. He talked to Stephen Curry, but gave us a stat that really surprised me. The Rockets ran 45 isolation plays in Game 1. They averaged 22. And that was more isolation plays, 45, in one game than any team in the last five seasons. They're reverting to old school basketball. Counting on their stars. Oh, that was just, I just cracked my finger. That was great. Counting on their stars to will them to the promised land rather than swinging the ball and playing Jogo Bonito, the beautiful game. It's what they call soccer, but I think it applies to the Warriors. The way they swing the ball, the assists, the hockey assists, the vision, the camaraderie, the sharing, it really drives everybody's game. And I don't think Houston has that right now. They don't have a system that is driving everybody's game. It's not driving Trevor Ariza's game. It's not driving PJ Tucker's game. Even Clint Capella seemed like he struggled a little bit in Game 1. But Steph had this to say about playing defense, doing what he does on the court. If I was the opposite coach and saw Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, and Draymond Green, I'm most likely going to go after me. Especially for a team that relies on ISO situations like they do. Cleveland has done it for years. My whole goal is that if you want to abandon your normal offense to try to pick on me and put me in mismatch situations or whatever it is, then over the course of 48 minutes, I'm going to get enough stops to figure it out. That was some confidence from Stephen Curry, and I love it. He played the passing lanes extremely well. He held his own. He's got a nice center of gravity, and we know he can deadlift a ton. If you look at him over the last few seasons, he's gotten bigger. His arms have gotten bigger. His whole frame is bigger, stronger, and he is. He's holding his own. But moving on, Connor Letourneau has a good story on SFGate about Kevon Looney. He played 25 minutes in game one and contested 19 shots. No one else contested more than 10. A lot of that was the Rockets putting Kevon on an island out near the three-point arc, and he contested a ton of shots. I've talked about his ability to contest shots in the past. He's got such long arms, and his feet are more fleet-footed than people give him credit for. The Rockets tried to go at him multiple times, and they had a few successes, but for the most part, Kevon held his own. Steve Kerr says he doesn't need to draw anything up for game two that would make it more difficult for Houston to isolate Looney. And that is one, confidence, but two, it's proven. They isolate Looney, they get out of their offense, and Looney contests the shot strongly. Apparently, Looney spent August at UCLA going against guards in pickup games whenever possible. He wanted to be able to defend multiple positions, so he learned that skill over the summer. Earlier in the season, when he wasn't getting as many minutes, he stayed late with Chris DeMarco, the player development coach, one of them, to fine-tune footwork, switching off ball screens. Outside of Durant and Green, Kevon has made himself the most versatile and therefore most valuable big man that the Warriors have on their playoff roster. I knew I was doing all right, Looney said of playing against James Harden, guarding him out on the perimeter. There weren't any easy ones for him. There were maybe like two or three, but he's a shot maker. That's what he does. He loves those type of shots. You have to live with those sometimes. Kerr said he's out there for a reason. He's an excellent one-on-one defender. He's got great length, and it's not easy scoring on him, whether at the rim or on the perimeter. And I just want to say, I love Steve Kerr. He's so praiseful in the right ways. He really instills confidence in his team. Obviously, they don't need, these guys are veterans now. Curry, Durant, Thompson, Green, veterans. Hardcore. But sometimes you need a coach to be able to push you without pushing you too far. And Steve Kerr is so good at that. Hands off, but hands on. Just kind of towing the line. Calling them out when they need to be called out. You'll recall that he's said a few times when the Warriors were playing poorly that they played pathetic. And that'll light a fire under your ass. But he keeps it cool most of the time. Great at calling timeouts, saving them for late in the game. So willing and eager to bring other very smart people. First Alvin Gentry, then promoting Luke Walton, now Mike Brown, who took a team to the finals, coached a lot of places. Steve Kerr wins at life. He just is, he seems like a compassionate individual. His politics are more than sound. We know this, Kerr Pop 2020. And he's just super personable. Just a great guy. But I have to take a break. We'll be back. And we're back, and we're going down the Reddit hole. My favorite thing, I haven't done it in a few weeks because it's been the playoffs. We're talking about the playoffs, but the playoffs Reddit hole got to be pretty good, right? So we're going straight to our Warriors. First things first, in honor of the Hamptons 5, we're going inside the house where Kevin Durant hosted NBA suitors in 2016. That's submitted by Redditor Ehout227. It's straight up in the New York Times. Like, this is a piece by Malika Andrews and Mark Stein, who made the move over to NYT. Apparently, all this went down at 189 Further Lane in East Hampton, a 5-bedroom, 7,400-square-foot estate one block from the Atlantic Ocean. 7,400 square feet. That's a mansion. How it only even has 5 bedrooms, I don't understand. It's on the market right now. Just under $15 million. Apparently, Further Lane is a special road in the Hamptons. Seinfeld lived there. That's cool. The rental was $10,000 a day. 10 days. That's a cool $100,000. but obviously nothing for a man as rich as Kevin Durant. It's weird to think of these guys as being rich, but they're so filthy rich, it's kind of ridiculous. The property was built, well, the house on the property was built in 2004. The previous house at the address, according to the realtor, was owned by a former mafia member, and the house was nearly windowless. Durant stayed in the master bedroom. They brought a king-size bed because there was only a queen in there, and obviously big, big guy. The dude who owned the house suggested that the location of the Hamptons 5 house coming out might actually increase the value of the house, and good for him. Anyway, Redditor Kim Chismo posted a poster that he designed with the Hamptons 5. It's pretty good. They're all in scary poses, and there's fire behind them and everything like that. It's nice. Klay Thompson looks a little bit weird. Andre doesn't quite look like Andre. I think the best job was Stephen Curry, who looks kind of anime. It's pretty cool. Steph Curry in an anime would be pretty cool. Can we get an anime about basketball? Patent pending. Redditor Hisham00 posted a pretty funny meme. God's talking to KD. Asks him, you want a 30-foot pull-up or waves? And the meme is the crying black kid with the kind of tie-dye background behind it. It's hilarious. It's really, really funny. If y'all out there who are unfamiliar with black hair don't know about waves, those are, like, does Chris Brown have waves? I think he's got pretty good waves. You wear a cap and your hair kind of gets kind of wavy. The curls come together and it looks pretty cool. I used to have waves when I was a kid, but I'm not invested in that life anymore. And we know KD's hair is going in the back a little bit. His hairline is pretty good, but he definitely has those little curls, can't get waves. You know, it is what it is. Apparently Draymond is giving him some shit for balding. Kind of nice to hear these guys rib on each other like that, and kind of they're friends, and you know, obviously Draymond, KD, they have their special clap clap, and they're really, really good friends, and I just love how quickly that manifested itself. Redditor Robotsaur, who's very active on the Warriors subreddit, posted Anthony Slater's of the Athletics video from Houston's practice, and to end the practice, Curry laid down the one-handed hammer. He can get up there. Probably won't see it in games, but pretty cool to see him getting up, knowing that his knee is healthy, knowing that his ankle is healthy. I think it's only a matter of time before you see a breakout game from Stephen Curry. And he's doing all the little things right now. Jamal Crawford said that. Jamal Crawford, smart guy. Steph hasn't been a liability on defense, wasn't a liability on defense in game one. He's using the threat of his three-point shooting very, very well, getting to the basket easily. Hitting a high percentage and getting fouled a lot of the time. Honestly, they're not calling those fouls. He got whacked on the head one time in game one, didn't get the foul call. Still not getting the respect he deserves from the refs. If respect is a concept we want to get into at all, he's just not respected as one of the top scorers and one of the guys who is targeted the most. I mean, one of the top scorers in the paint and around the restricted area. According to Brian T. Smith from the Houston Chronicle, Harden says he's ready to play 48 minutes if he has to. That's crazy. From Redditor ZPRY Mate. How do you even pronounce that? Oh, Zprimate. Oh, that's pretty good. An interesting point made by Redditor Urson Templar. Steve Kerr's subbing in Nick Young once he realized... I mean, he might have subbed in Nick Young anyway. This is a good matchup for Nick Young, I think. But once he realized that Curry and Looney were getting ISO'd over and over and over, he subs in Nick Young, and Houston didn't attack Nick Young once. And Nick Young, not known for his defense, you know? So Young was able to manage to stay on the court because they didn't attack him in the defensive sets. They kept going after Curry. They kept going after Looney. And Young made 3 of 5 threes, was a +4 for the night. Really, really good coaching. Urson Templar manages to take a dig at Mike D'Antoni, calling him stubborn and inflexible. I don't know about that, but Kerr plays chess. It's a beautiful thing. Got to take a break. We'll be back to talk about LeBron and the Celtics. And we're back, and I just want to say first, LeBron James is amazing. He's an amazing human being and an amazing basketball player, and the haters are going to hate, but LeBron is the truth. He works so hard at his craft. Yeah, he complains to the refs. So does everybody else. Off the court, he's a stand-up guy. Yeah, the decision was just a bad, bad move. But the man brought two championships to Miami and one to Cleveland after returning. All's forgiven. So last night he goes out, gets 42, 10, and 12. But I think he played into the Celtics' game plan by not attacking the rim as ferociously as he has in the past, and by going away from his patented mid-range game. He took a lot of threes, 11 to be exact, making 5 of them, and after his hot 21-point first quarter, he got real cold. 11 is 3 more than his previous high in this playoffs, game 1 versus Toronto. In that game, he went 1 of 8. No bueno. But they won it. In game 3 in Cleveland, I don't think you're going to see nearly as much of LeBron trying to win the game from the three-point line. I think you're going to see him attacking. I think you're going to see him going back to what's been working for him in these playoffs. And you might see, you know, a few threes, 4 or 5. But you can bet he's watching this tape, watching the shots, seeing the quality of the shots, the quality of the possessions, and he's going to make adjustments. The Celtics, for their part, also should make a few adjustments. Down by as many as 11 points before coming back and basically kind of running away with the game. I mean, I don't really know how you adjust against LeBron, how you stop him from doing all of those amazing things that he does. He had 3 40-point games against Indiana in the first round. You'll recall that went 7 games. And a 40-point game in Toronto as well. All wins. All 4 of those games were wins. He got 42 last night. Wasn't able to pull it out. So the Celtics are doing something right. Attacking George Hill, who's starting, I think is very smart. And they're doing a good job of trying to deny the ball from shooters. They didn't do a great job on Kyle Korver in the last game. But ultimately, Korver wasn't able to hit shots down the stretch. But the Celtics are so good, so long, so talented defensively that they were able to go on a big run and essentially dominate the third quarter, which they won 36-22. 14 points from Terry Rozier in the quarter on 5 of 8 shooting. Jaylen Brown playing some real solid defense, as well as Marcus Morris, who played all 12 minutes, played a lot on LeBron James. And Aaron Baines made his 10th three-pointer of the playoffs. They're getting contributions from all over their roster. It's just amazing to see their chemistry, to see how good they play together. Jason Tatum, a revelation as a rookie. Oh boy, it's now 3 o'clock, 3 hours until game time. I'm going to end this podcast early, get it out to you as soon as possible. Stay thoughtful, Hoops Heads.